Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Shalom Aleichem, Assalamu Aleichem, Namaste, Pak Satnam, Sat Sri Akal, Tashi Dalek, Ho Lila Tayawakan Yake. That last greeting, as I've said before, is Lakota Sioux, in American Indian, Lakota Sioux, for hello, may everything be well. Let me adjust down the recording levels just a little bit here so that we're not maxing it out and giving you nothing but static, which is no good. All right, I think that's better. Welcome to today's class in Sabbatean Kabbalah, Introduction to Sabbatean Kabbalah. We've been talking about the Torah. And we will continue on that today. But before I do that, I will first recite the Kaddish for the Mourners of the Dead, as I do before each class. And I ask, as always, that you please close your eyes as you listen. And remember someone to whom you were close who has died. And in doing this, you will bring that person into your memory, out of your memory, into your consciousness, into the light of your consciousness. And when you do that, you will honor that person's life and bless his or her memory. And you will also bless yourself for doing that. Okay. Yishkadal v'yishkadash meirabo, bomo di veiro kirase, ve'yamlik melkase, mekaya kon uvyo mekon, Uvkaya dekol base Yisrael, ba'agalo uvizman koriev ve'imru omein. Ye he shme rabo mevorak leolam ule ome olmayo. Yisbarak ve'yistabak ve'yisparar ve'yisromam ve'yisnase ve'yishadar ve'yisala ve'yishalal. Shmedikacho berik u leolo. Minko berkoso ve shiroso, tush bekoso venekemoso, da amiron beomo ve imru omen. Ye he shlomo rabo min shamayo, vekayim lenu veal kol Yisrael ve imru omen. Ose shalom bimromov, hu yashe shalom, alenu veal kol Yisrael ve imru omen. Thank you. Thank you very much. Let me just check our recording levels here. Yes, we're still recording and the levels are fine. Good. It's terrible when you get to the end of a session, as has happened to me, and you've spent 45 minutes teaching, and you get ready to post the teaching to the website and discover that you neglected to push the on button on the recording software. All right. We have been talking about why we should study Torah in preparation for teaching on how we go about studying Torah based on its structure. And in our last class meeting, we talked about a concept called the terror of it all, a realization that hopefully comes to each person at some point in their lifetime. A form of self-remembering, remembering who you are, not who you thought you were, not who others think you are, not who your persona is. Persona is it's a term developed by Carl Gustav Jung, the great avatar of the 20th century, the theologian, the mystic, the great mystic. He's all these things, much more than what many people think he was and remember him for, which is a psychologist. But he just used psychology to help explore mystical and theological subjects. But anyway, Jung talked about the persona as being the mask, the garment that we put on when we go to work every day. It's what he describes in these words, what we want other people to think about us as to who we are. The identity that we want others to accept for us. Now, there's a big difference between that and what we really are. And there's a real danger, and Jung points this out when he says, and I don't have the exact quote, but I'll paraphrase it, the danger is in the persona taking over and us becoming the persona. In other words, becoming possessed by an archetypal image that we originally put on kind of as a shield or as a garment, a set of clothing, a mask that we wear, so that as a defense mechanism, something that we project so that others see this projection and not who we truly are. And most of us do this, and at first we do this out of an immature sense of vulnerability and fear of others. We are afraid to let people see who we are, see what we are. We're afraid that we'll be found wanting. We're afraid that people will reject us or persecute us. But in a healthy person who is going through the process of individuation, this is a stage that we should grow out of. But sometimes we don't do that. Oftentimes people don't do that. And what happens is the persona takes over, takes on a life of its own. Jung talks about the fact that archetypes are actual living beings that come up out of us, rise up from the collective unconscious that we all share as human beings, that we all inherit as a part of our DNA, is a collective unconscious, a place where archetypal beings and symbols and that also express themselves in the world of myth and stories and arts and letters exist. A storehouse. It's actually a world, and this is something that every person needs to explore, is this world. It expresses itself every night in your dreams. You will see certain persons in your dreams who you think you may know. Because you'll say, oh, that's my mother. Or, oh, that's my wife. Or, oh, that's that guy I went to school with 20 years ago. Why am I remembering him? I haven't thought of him in 20 years. They're not really those people. Those identifications that you have for these people in your dream are usually not those people. There are instances in which you have to interpret each dream, and there are instances in which they really are those people in your dream, and a dream is about something mundane, truly is something mundane, about something that you're troubled with at the current time, or a problem you're working on, or something that happened to you that was traumatic earlier at the office in that earlier that week. And so yourself, your personality, your ego are working out these problems. But when that's not the case, and believe me, this is often, at least as often as being a mundane dream, it's an archetypal dream. And what this is your psyche, yourself, your inner self communicating with your ego through dreams. In Kabbalistic terms, it's the Baal HaKalom. B-A-apostrophe-A-L, ha, that's Baal, meaning master in Hebrew, ha, H-A hyphen, kolom, C-H-O-L-O-M, possibly a B on the end, I'm not sure. It doesn't matter. Baal ha kolom, meaning of the dream, master of the dream. It's the master of the dream sending down to you images in a certain sequence. Not just images, but actually acting out using the archetypes of the unconscious, beings that inhabit the unconscious, which the unconscious is a doorway to the upper worlds. And so what you're seeing is you're seeing denizens and inhabitants of the supernal worlds, denizens, inhabitants of the abyss, especially if you have nightmares. These are actual beings that exist. One of these is the persona that you adopt. This other personality that you want others to see instead of your real self. And so you project it. You put on a suit. You put on a button-down white shirt and a tie. You cinch it up really tight to where you can hardly breathe. You grab your... Every hair is combed into place. Your teeth are pearly white with whitening strips. Every 6 months or 4 months, you go to the dentist and they clean your teeth. Everything has to be perfect. You go out that door with a briefcase in hand, catch a bus or drive, whatever your situation in the suburbs or the city is, and you go to work. And you're there from 8 to 5, and more often it's 8 to 6, 8 to 7, 7 to 9. More and more this is the case. And you're there to show that you're the hardworking employee. You're there to show that you're the successful MBA, the successful bachelor's degree in marketing who really did learn something about marketing, who didn't just take marketing as a because he thought it was the easiest path through a business to getting a business degree. Okay, and you want to project these certain images because it's images that supervisors use to make decisions about promotion and bonuses, isn't it? We all know this. Let's don't fool ourselves and pretend otherwise. Or maybe you're the mother who does everything, the career mother who also has the children, and you project an image of being super competent, super hardworking. You do everything. You not only hold down an 8-to-5 job, 9-to-5 job, not only do you have a career, but when you get home at night, you take care of making the dinner, cleaning the house, taking care of the kids. You do all of that. You ferry your kids around. You're to the other women at the soccer field, you're just like them. You're a soccer mom. Except that somehow you're managing to keep a job and a career going, and they're all marveling at your incredible competence. Yes. That's an image that you're projecting. That's not truly who you are. And if that's truly who you are, then what I'm saying is that your persona, your mask, the garment, the false figure on the kabuki stage, that you have this mask that you're holding in front of your face has taken over. You're no longer yourself. You're no longer in control. You're now a puppet. You're no longer the puppeteer. Okay. Now, it's the waking up from that situation where you're just sleepwalking through life with no real meaning or purpose that we're talking about. It's the moment of awakening when the terror of it all descends upon you, explodes in your consciousness like an atom bomb going off, and you're gripped by the sudden realization that you're not who you thought you were, or that who you are is not who you ought to be. It's not who you wanted to be. It's not who you intended to be. And you're wondering how you got to be where you are, where you have no control over your life, where you've wasted large numbers of years of your life. Well, we're going to talk about that a little bit more today in the time remaining to us. And give a good illustration of this, I'm going to read a short poem. It's not really short. It's less than one page long. A poem written by one of my favorite authors, a man whose spirit has visited me in my dreams, the great Augustinian fantasist, some would say realist, named Jorge Luis Borges. For us Americans, especially people who live in Dallas, Texas, we call him George A. Luis Borges. Okay? It's really Jorge Luis Borges. And he's dead now. But his writing, his literature lives on, and it will for a long time. Because it is of such quality that it has attained that degree of immortality that all of the best literature hopes to attain. Well, I'm here to tell you that his literature, his writing has attained that level of immortality. And here's a short poem that illustrates what we've been talking about. Okay? The title of this poem is Matthew 25:30, as in the New Testament verse. Matthew chapter 25:30. And it has at the top of the poem, before the poem starts, the words of the verse. And here it is. And cast ye the unprofitable servant into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Okay, and here's the poem. The first bridge, Constitution Station. At my feet, the shunting trains trace iron labyrinths. Steam hisses up and up into the night, which becomes at a stroke the night of the Last Judgment. From the unseen horizon and from the very center of my being, an infinite voice pronounced these things. Things, not words. This is my feeble translation, time-bound, of what was a single, limitless word. Quote, stars, bread, libraries of east and west, playing cards, chessboards, galleries, skylights, cellars, a human body to walk with on the earth, fingernails, growing at nighttime and in death, shadows for forgetting, mirrors busily multiplying, cascades in music, gentlest of all time's shapes, borders of Brazil, Uruguay, horses and mornings, a bronze weight, a copy of the Grettir saga, algebra and fire, the charge at Yunin in your blood. Days more crowded than Balzac, scent of the honeysuckle, love and the imminence of love, an intolerable remembering, dreams like buried treasure, generous luck, and memory itself where a glance can make men dizzy. All this was given to you, and with it the ancient nourishment of heroes. Treachery, defeat, humiliation. In vain have oceans been squandered on you. In vain the sun, wonderfully seen through Whitman's eyes. You have used up the years, and they have used you up. And still, you have not written the poem. End quote. It's just so beautiful. I hope that this has not been lost on you, that the impact of the enormousness of what this poem is saying has not been lost upon you. What this poem is saying is that as he's walking along, the writer of the poem, the poet, and he sees the first bridge, or remembers the first bridge that he's ever seen. And he passes Constitution Station, which is a station in Buenos Aires, the city that's the capital of Argentina, because Jorge Luis Borges is Argentinian. And so this would be known to the Argentinians, a place. Constitution Station, just like we have Central Park or the main train station in New York. I can't remember its name, Times Central or something like that. He says, at my feet, shunting trains, trace iron labyrinths. He's saying the trains are running down labyrinths of iron rails, and the steam is hissing up and into the night. But then it becomes, at a stroke, the night of the last judgment. And from an unseen horizon, from the very center of his being, an infinite voice pronounces the following things. And they're things, not words, because the things that he hears are a single, limitless word expressed, intoned by an infinite voice. And he says, what follows is my feeble translation. And then between the quotes, which is the most of the poem, are these words. And I'm going to read them to you one more time so that you can get the import, the impact of it. Stars, bread, libraries of East and West, playing cards, chessboards, galleries, skylights, cellars, a human body to walk with on the earth, fingernails growing at nighttime and in death, shadows for forgetting, mirrors busily multiplying, cascades and music, gentlest of all time shapes, borders of Brazil, Uruguay, horses and mornings, a bronze weight, a copy of the Grettir saga, algebra and fire, the charge at Unin in your blood, days more crowded than Balzac, a sense of the honeysuckle, scent of the honeysuckle, love and the imminence of love, an intolerable remembering, dreams like buried treasure, generous luck, and memory itself where a glance can make men dizzy. All this was given to you, and with it the ancient nourishment of heroes. Treachery, defeat, humiliation. In vain have oceans been squandered on you. In vain the sun, wonderfully seen through Whitman's eyes. You have used up the years, and they have used up you. And still, you have not written the poem. What Borges is saying here is that one night God spoke to him in images and in one terrible, single, limitless word that was filled with these images. That is a list. This is a list poem. Okay? And what that God said, what God said to Borges is, I've given you all these things. I gave you a body to walk with here on the earth, a human body. I gave you music. I gave you love. I gave you memory. I gave you dreams that were like buried treasure. And I was generous with luck for you, Borges. And I gave you an incredible memory, where a glance can make men dizzy. Gave you the stars, bread. I gave you the libraries of both the Orient and the Occident, through which you can dig and read and see what others who've come before you have done. I laid out before you the oceans, but I wasted them on you, Borges. I gave you the sun, which Whitman saw. His eyes were fixed on the sun when he was alive, and he didn't squander the sight of the sun. No, it was wonderfully seen through his eyes. But you've used up the years that I've given you, Borges, and the years have used you up. And still, you have not written the poem. What poem? What poem is God talking about here? Well, he's talking about the poem that he wanted Borges to write. The reason that he put Borges on this earth. Borges has written a lot of essays. Borges has written a lot of poems. He's written a lot of fictions, short stories, a lot of parables. I'm holding in front of me right here, what I'm reading out of this book here is 500 and some pages, selected poems by Borges. But God told him, still, all of the things I've given you, all of the environment I put you in, I've given you the means to write the poem, and still you haven't written it. And so the judgment of Matthew chapter 25, verse 30, is what Borges fears, and that's why he has used as an epigram at the top of this poem the words of Matthew 25, 30. And cast ye the unprofitable servant into outer darkness, there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So what Borges is saying in this poem is that he had this terrible moment of awakening when he was walking along the first bridge, when he went past Constitution Station, and at his feet he saw the trains shunting back and forth, tracing labyrinths in the darkness of the night on the iron rails they ran on. And when the steam hisses from the trains and came up into the night, at that point, that night became, at a stroke, the night of the Last Judgment. And it all of what I just related to you and what he related to us in this poem burst upon his into his consciousness like fireworks going off or like an atom bomb. And there was this incredible realization that he came to, that he, like other men, like Whitman, like the heroes of past who endured treachery, defeat, and humiliation, the nourishment for those heroes, the seas of the earth, the shape of the borders of Brazil and Uruguay on maps, the smell of horses and mornings, all of these things are put here only to support God's servants in their divine mission, in their avada, that's Hebrew for the divine mission, divine service. Each one of us exists in this world for a purpose. We are not born here as a result of an accident, regardless of how your mother's egg came to be impregnated by your father's sperm. That's not relevant. You are more than your body. You are not your body. I repeat, you are not your body. You are much more than your body. You are a soul that was sent down from the supernal worlds by God and was sent down here with a destiny, with a divine service to perform. Just as Borges is talking about here, just as Matthew is talking about, and cast ye the unprofitable servant into outer darkness, there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. We are not here as an accident. We have been sent here by God. And as Derek Hashem teaches, which is what? Oral Torah. That we are the primary essential creature in this world. And as it says in Derek Hashem, part 1, section 2, verse 5, this primary essential creature is man. All other created things, whether above or below man, only exist for his sake, to complete his environment through their various different qualities, appropriate for each of them. All other created things, whether above or below man, only exist for his sake to complete his environment. And that's what Borges is doing in this poem. He's listing off all of the things in his environment, not all of them. He's just listing off a few that God gave him through the infinite voice on the night of the last judgment in a single limitless word. He just listed off a few of the things. There might be 50 things here in this list. Things that God gave him in Borges' environment, as a part of his environment, things designed to complete his environment, to allow him to carry out his divine mission. Baruch Hashem. This world has been created to support you and me in the carrying out and completion of each one of our individual and collective avadim. That might be avadat. I'm not sure what the plural form is. I don't claim to know the Hebrew language. I'll make that clear right now. I do not claim to be proficient in Hebrew. I know just enough to get me in trouble, and you're going to discover that as time goes on more and more. But I do know enough that I can do a little bit of translation. But each of us has an individual avodah, divine mission, divine service. Service to whom? To God. And together we have the many of us have a collective avodah. Okay? And we're put here to carry out that service to God. We are here to make the world a better place than it was when we were born. If we get to the end of our life, we're going to face the night of the last judgment that Borges is talking about here in his poem. We're all going, when we get to the end of our lifetimes, we're all going to embark upon that dark night. The dark night of the soul, it has been called. And we're going to be called to account for the time that God gave us on this earth. To account for the resources and the assets that He put into our hands and into our control. And He's going to say, I gave you this many years. Just like He's saying to Borges in this. You have used up the years and they have used you up. Now you've come to the end of your life. And still you have not written the poem. We are each here to write a divine poem. Our lives form a poem. When we get, we may not be able to see it now, but when we embark upon that final journey, when we abandon our bodies and our souls rise up into the supernal worlds, we come before a judgment time. And it's a review period. And our lives are laid out. And God says, okay, it's time to account for the time I gave you and the resources and assets of your environment. Now, you remember what your divine mission was, don't you? No? Woe be to you. Better for you had you not been born. Well, let's see what you accomplished. Okay, this is what we're talking about here. And when we talk about the terror of it all is coming to the realization that we are here for our own purposes. God created us, that there's only one God. God has a certain nature. God is in charge of the world. God made the world. God made us. He made us to carry out a divine service. And when we carry out that divine service, this is pleasing to God and it adds merit to our souls. And when we do this, it's called perfecting ourselves. Because why? We're carrying out God's will. We are carrying out the divine service that He has assigned to each of us. Each one of us has an individual divine service that is different from every other person's divine service. But we also have a collective divine service. Avodah, that we have to carry out. And when you're born, you forget all of this. You know it before you're born, because you're called forth as a soul in the supernal world. And God, through His ministering angels, through a particular angel that some people term as our guardian angel, others in Greek I think it's called Daimon, D-A-I-M-O-N. Hopefully I pronounced that right. Daimon, Daimon, Demon. I don't like demon, it sounds like D-E-M-O-N. But anyway, that ministering angel says to us when we do not yet have a body, before we've been placed into the physical body that is being formed in the womb of our mother, from the union of the egg and the sperm of our mother and father, prior to that, our soul is called forth, and the messenger of God, the ministering angel, says, here are the choices that you have to make right now. Here is the service that God would like you to perform. Will you perform this service? And we would not be here had we not said yes. And so we know what that service is. This is what's known as destiny. Avada, divine service. What God wants us to do. The carrying out of God's will for us in this world. And we come down and our soul is implanted into that body, is bound to the body of the fetus in the womb. And it goes from being a fetus to being a living being. And at that moment, consciousness surges into that fetus and it wakes up in the womb. And it has a universal consciousness. The ego is at one with the self. Using Jung's terms, the self being a term for God. The ego being the term for the body and the soul joined together. And it knows at that time, we do what we have to do, what our divine service is. But according to the laws that are set up in this universe and in this world, according to the supernal wisdom of God, God's great Chokmah, His highest wisdom, the moment we are born and we are discharged, that we are born, pulled forth from the womb of our mother through the birth canal, we suffer amnesia and we do not remember our past lives. We do not remember our avada, our divine service. And we are brought into this world not remembering. And at the same time, we begin a process in which our ego doesn't remember that it is the offspring of the self. In other words, that it is an archetype of the self, an archetype of God. We are a chip off the old block. We are a divine being. We are a divine soul bound to a physical body. It forgets all of that. It forgets that there is a God. And the infant is one huge, enormous ego. And through the process of individuation, that ego has to go through stages of maturing. And it has to be struck down by its parents and by others around it as it goes through school. It has to learn that it's not the not God, and that it's not in control of the universe, and then it's not in control of the world, and it's not in control of this nation, it's not in control of the city, and it's not in control of all the people around it, and then finally the realization has to come, and this can happen at any time. Praise be to God for those few people for whom this realization comes at a very young age. Say in their 20s. But for most people, it doesn't come until the 30s, 40s, or 50s. For some poor people, it never comes at all. And that is that they're not even in control of themselves. That's the realization, that you're not in control of yourself, that your ego is capable of only making bad decisions, that your life, that your condition of darkness and failure has come about as a result of allowing your ego to make decisions for you. And at that point, as terrible as that realization is, It's good. It's good. Because only then can you come to the next step, which is to say, well, if my ego is not in control of myself, my fate, who or what is? And then you begin the search for meaning, the search for ultimate reality, the search for God. And it takes a long time for many people, but ultimately you come to the realization that's known as the terror of it all, that we talk that is talked about here in Borges's poem, Matthew 25:30, verse 30. The realization that God put you here for a purpose. God put you here to carry out a divine service. And that you have been wasting your life, walking around as a sleepwalker. Like the people in that movie, Matrix, who were still plugged in to the Matrix and thought they were alive but weren't alive. Now, sometimes waking up, as the song goes, is hard to do. And then when you wake up from a nice, happy, warm, fuzzy place that you thought you were in to a world of horror and terror, like in that movie, The Matrix. That movie is another metaphor for the terror of it all. That moment of dawn, that moment of metaphysical dawn, when you begin to see life for what it really is, not what you thought it was. You see yourself for who you are, not what you thought you were. Not that projection. Not that persona that you're projecting out to other people. You see it for who you really are. You see yourself for who you really are. That is the moment of terror. The terror of it all that Borges talks about that I mentioned yesterday. But that's the moment of salvation, because at that moment, the old self dies and the new self is born. It's a moment of rebirth. Praise be to God. That's the moment when you can get your life on track and you can begin to carry out your divine service for the first time in your life. You can put your life in charge of the Maker, of God, of the Creator, of the unknowable mind that created everything around you and sent you down here to carry out a divine service. You can begin to say, all right, Lord, I am your servant, what is your will for me? And that's the day that you truly begin to live. That's the first day of your real life. That concludes today's lesson. We will continue on tomorrow and begin to study God's great gift to us, the Torah, which He has given to us as a tool to help us discover His will and to live that our lives out in service of God's will, which is the only way we can ever achieve a sense of purpose to our lives and a sense of meaning to our existence and a sense of fulfillment. All right. This lecture will be rebroadcast tonight in the same room, Beit HaMidrash, Sabbatai and Kabbalah, on Pal Talk at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Until tomorrow, I ask each of you to remember God at least twice, and remember that it's God who brought you here, God who gave you a divine service to carry out, and God who suffers because we have not yet carried out His will. So have mercy on God and begin to carry out His will. Remember Him twice. And may you go from strength to strength. Zagesund.